Welcome to Flip the Script podcast, where we flip the narrative on issues that affect men's health.
Our aim is to talk about the weird, the wonderful, and perhaps the unspoken issues that affect men, so you can feel empowered and back to living your best life.
Let's get into it. Hey guys, I'm super pumped to have William Smith Stubbs joining me today. He is a behavioral strategist, mental health advocate, and co-founder of Spur, which is a mental health non-for-profit organization with incredible campaigns focused on raising awareness for men's mental health, in particular, suicide prevention. Thank you so much for joining us today, Will.
No problem. Thanks, Jessica.
So I was looking at this today and it's pretty impressive. Since 2011, Spur has reached over 40 million people worldwide in over 105 countries. Can you tell me a bit about the journey that led you to co-create Spur and the amazing work that Spur has done today?
And great to be having a chat with you. And it's always really weird to hear your work summed up like that. So let me kind of try and unpack our work over the last 10 years. So we co-founded, my co-founders and I, about 10 years ago, a non-profit, which officially is called Spur Projects. We tend to refer it to it now as Spur or Spur Org. And it was based on a realization that the number one killer of men in Australia, aged 14 to 44, was suicide. And as myself, as a young boy, when I was about 12, I went through a really difficult time. I came quite sick, and as a result of that illness, fell into depression. And around about 12, suicide was, to me, the option that seemed most attractive. And I was really, really lucky, and I'm very grateful that I survived that suicidality. But it stayed with me. And then in my early 20s, after not having really thought about it for a long time, but experiencing depression over my teen years, I met a couple other young guys in Brisbane called Lee Crockford and Ehon Chan. And they had an idea about creating a campaign to try and tackle this problem of suicide. So a friend of a friend introduced us. I thought I could help with, you know, various different things behind the scenes, but I ended up sort of becoming the poster boy for the campaign, using my experiences of depression and suicidality to help other men understand how to talk about it and how to seek help. In fact, our very first campaign was based on that premise of, as young boys, we're taught so much to toughen up and to harden up, to bottle things up inside of us and not to seek help. So rather cheekily, our first campaign was called Soften the Fuck Up. And it was aimed at trying to get men to be okay with being soft sometimes and to seek help. But it didn't make you a masculine. In fact, it was a very masculine thing to do, to try and help yourself and to try and receive help. But that led to a really amazing opportunity to create a nonprofit that's worked in a range of different areas over the years, focused on mental health and well-being. And now we have a few other ventures as well, a commercial design studio focused on social impact, and a software startup based on helping employers better understand the emotional needs of their employees.
Yeah, you can tell that what you're doing is not only coming from a place of your own experience, but you're really helping so many other people. And obviously you can see the amazing work that you guys have done today. It's really incredible. Talking about, you know, that masculinity, that feeling vulnerable, that speaking out, can you tell me a little bit about how you would describe masculinity and what are those key attributes and behaviors? Gee. Because I think a lot of men struggle with this. Like, you know, not only is there the patriarchy or, you know, the way that society kind of defines it, but what does it really mean to you? I'd love to know.
That's a really interesting and tough question. It's complicated, first of all, and it's changing. It has been changing for quite some time. What I would say, though, is in terms of what it means to me is whatever I want it to mean. You know, traditionally, masculine roles or masculine behaviors or even emotions were, and actually I shouldn't say traditionally, for some time, let's say, you know, the past century, men were taught to be masculine means to be cold and aggressive and assertive and stoic. And in many cases, we were taught to be men by being told, look at everything a woman is supposed to be and just don't be that, which is a really terrible way to educate boys about how to be healthy, happy, emotional human beings, which is what we are. If you go back earlier, though, one of my favorite references for this, and when we talk about masculinity, can be so many different things, but we've been taught for a long time that it means to be, you know, it's about the, you know, the more aggressive or the more emotionally distant sort of side of things. And I would actually argue it's not that. Being masculine to me would be to care for others, to provide for others, to protect others, and to want to improve things. And yet, you know, I can look at many women who do those things as well. And does that mean that they're masculine, or does that mean that those things are feminine? I don't think so. I think it really is whatever you want that thing to be. So if you go back to Shakespearean times, you know, so hundreds of years ago, there's a line in Macbeth after the murder of this family where one of the friends of this fellow has said, you know, you have to avenge their deaths. And this character says, you know, he's a lord and he's a warrior. And he turns around and he says, and yet I will do that, but first I must feel it like a man. And so he spends time grieving. And I think one of the things that we've lost with masculinity over the years is the freedom to feel beyond just a few select types of emotions. And for my work, the problem that has arisen is, as a boy growing up, if you're told to, you know, when you fall down, you know, to not be upset, to not cry, to not have emotions or experience a wide range of emotions. When you do need help and you're in crisis, you're going through a tough time, it's really difficult to ask for help because that's seen as emasculine. So to sum all that up, I know it's sort of a sidestepping answer to say it can be whatever you want it to be. But I think the more that we can allow human beings to just be human beings and to express that in whatever, which way they wish, I think we'll be happier as a result, we'll be healthier as a result, and less torn up about, am I acting or behaving in the right way that I've been told to do? Which I admit does lead to some confusion then if you don't have much guidance.
Yeah, I guess you're seeing, instead of seeing society as your compass, you're going inward and using yourself as your compass as to how to act, how to behave, and that kind of thing. But that could be, that could technically be the difference between living or dying if you've got, you know, a mental health issue and you have so much shame around seeking out support or seeking help or being vulnerable. Because the statistics, you probably know, the statistics are a lot less in women, right? Because women naturally love to communicate. We are very open with our emotions. So we process these negative thought patterns and that kind of thing, and we seek support a lot more freely, you would assume, right?
Yes, although the catch there is that women attempt suicide about 3 times more than men. In terms of numbers.
Okay.
Yeah. So while we have, there's about 3,000 deaths a year from suicide that are men, 3 times more than that are attempts from women. The reason that they don't end up dying from that attempt is a number of things, including, I think, primarily the method. So women tend towards methods of suicide that are less catastrophic and they can be rescued from or intervened with more easily.
Okay.
So there is actually, you know, I would say, at the moment, and talk to a lot of men through the work that we do over the years who are struggling with kind of the new lack of definition, I suppose, of masculinity and gender. It's not just men who are suffering, though. Women are also suffering in that we're all being told multiple different things, experiencing pressures of society that we've never been really able to figure out. I mean, not only are we going through a 100-year pandemic, we have less time to ourselves, we have more work, we have multiple stresses, we can be reached for work in our homes now, not just in the workplace. Relationships are generally harder these days, economically it's harder these days. And so it's hard for everyone. But particularly if you are, you know, I'll give you 2 examples. Yes, as a man, if you ascribe to traditional ideas of masculinity and gender, you'd find it a lot harder to ask for help because you might be afraid of being seen as weak or inferior, and having emotions would be an emasculine thing, which is kind of ironic because we also tell men that they should know how to fix things, right? So if you can fix an engine, but you can't fix your heart, which I always find quite strange. Which, you know, prevents them from not seeking help, and as you say, is a risk to your own life. On the other hand, you have women who are particularly these days, because of a lot of advances in women's rights, are kind of told to be everything, you know, not just that they should be a good mother and a good daughter, but they should also have a career and, you know, raise their kids and also go for that promotion and do all these things. So it's kind of been a blessing and a curse in that respect as well. And I think that often we try and compare the experiences of genders in the sense of, you know, which one is struggling the most at the moment in terms of this social redefinition of gender. We're both in the shit. You know, it's both terrible for all of us at the moment. I do think that it's positive, though. We are going through a process of saying, do these models of femininity and masculinity that we've had for the past decades, do they work anymore? And if not, should we, you know, start to unwind some of that infrastructure around it?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a hot topic for today's time. I think a lot of people are struggling with it, but I think it's definitely something that people just need to go inside themselves and work out. Have I got to a point where I'm feeling not aligned, not happy? Just look inside yourself and do those check-ins, because that's going to really tell you what's working and what's not. Because like you said, being feminine, being masculine may look different on different types of people and what they want to express themselves as. And I guess that's the future of where people are kind of going.
You perfectly put it. You know, I think it's very much, it should be, in my opinion, an individual thing, like what feels right to you. And I know, so I do CrossFit. I've done CrossFit for I think 10 years. And you know, there are women in the gym that I go to who are incredibly athletic and muscular and can do things that some of the guys in the gym can't do. Does that make them less feminine? I don't think so at all. And would they consider that less feminine? I don't think so. But I think we've chosen to relegate certain things like strength, physical strength, into, say, that's a man's thing, and emotional sensitivity is a woman's thing. When in actual fact, we're capable of both. An individual, you might be interested in or feel more comfortable with one or the other. Well, it's up to you to figure out what makes sense for you. Mm. I will say, though, and in particular, I'm aware of you know, some of the things that we've already discussed in this conversation, that doesn't mean it's not hard. I think it's really hard for my generation, who are kind of in a transitionary period of, we look at some of our parents, and I know my dad, for instance, growing up was a very emotionally distant sort of guy. And I think that there is a reaction from my generation to say, we don't want to be quite like that, but we also are figuring out what the alternative is. And how do you do that in a way that feels true to you, but you can also navigate? It is hard. And you know, I've no doubt that many of your listeners probably are struggling with that, of what feels right to me in terms of masculinity and what makes me a man. And I hope that, you know, our kids don't have to struggle with that question, that they have a lot more freedom in terms of how they can express themselves, but a lot more security in that this is okay.
Mm, that's incredible. And actually, circling back to what you were saying about women's empowerment movement, I kind of wanted to ask, have you seen kind of some of the people that you come across or the people that are involved in SPUR have issues around them feeling emasculated? Because I think women are like, wow, okay, I need to be this boss babe. I need to do this. Mm. I need to take action. I need to be in five different places at once. And through that process, they're delivering so much value. They're exporting so much energy. Is there not any space for men to kind of be in the same space?
I would say, if there's a question of like, in empowering women, does that push out men from spaces? I would say that's bullshit. It doesn't. And I totally understand why a man might feel that way, because, you know, there will be just less opportunities, because a lot of opportunities in the past were geared towards men. If you look back into an office 70 years ago, there weren't many women around. If there were, they were probably, you know, getting coffees or drinks for the madmen in the offices. So yeah, there's more competition, I suppose, in that sense. And that's okay. In the same regard, the empowerment of women is a benefit to men, in that if I no longer have to play a certain role myself, and my female partner has to play a certain role in terms of her career, well, that unlocks opportunities for her. And maybe I want to look after the kids, and that should be an okay thing for me to do without being less of a manly thing to do. I think there's A couple of things. One, I've always been of the belief that any man who is afraid or uncertain or nervous about the empowerment of women is probably afraid that the only thing that he has going for him is that he is a man. Because if you're nervous about giving women opportunities and empowering them and lifting them up from a history of oppression, what other reason would you be worried about that other than, well, where does that leave me as a result? And I would say if that is, you know, anybody of your listeners who might be feeling that way and uncertain, I wouldn't worry, because it will open up more opportunities for men to do things that we weren't allowed to do previously. We look at traditional careers, for instance, say nursing or care, traditionally not very many men in that industry, whereas now that's starting to become much more acceptable and much more open to those roles. Same with teachers. The other thing is, I'm not sure if you remember, I think it was Play School, and then she was on Better Homes and Gardens, Noni Hazelhurst.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like Australia's aunt, you know. She said something somewhere, and it always just stuck with me, about what would it mean if we could empower women and mend the broken hearts of men. And I think for me that is the crux of a lot of social reconfiguration that we're going through. Women for so long have been told, you know, you are objects or you're secondary, you're second-class citizens, and they're being lifted up. But at the same time, we do need to do a lot of work to help men to feel okay and to understand that a lot of the rules we've been given have been detrimental to us, such as don't seek help, which results in our death or worse health. So if we can do those two things, if we can empower women up to the same place as men in society, while also working on the emotional side that we as men need, we need that support, we need that freedom and that care, I think we have a much better society as a result.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I think that's a great mission for us all to have. And also for men and women to both know that just because, you know, we're empowering men or we're empowering women, it doesn't mean that there's no value that the opposite sex will give. Your value will always be there, and you have to just hold true to yourself and back yourself and know your own worth. And if that's not going to change, then why does anybody else changing around you really matter that much?
Yeah, and you know, it's not a zero-sum game. You know, empowering one group, empowering women doesn't mean you have to disempower men. That's not really kind of how it works. You're just providing more balance to the equation. And I think it's sometimes scary because it's change, but it will be okay in the end.
Just circling back to being authentic, we kind of like to summarize this. I can kind of see the overarching messaging and the overarching theme of this is, you know, look within yourself and do what's aligned with you, because at the end of the day, that's going to be your truth. Do you find that some people kind of feed into that toxic masculinity and that, you know, that toxic way of being? Or is this something that is kind of naturally starting to change? Do you see that moving into a better position in the future?
I actually was having a really interesting conversation about the term toxic masculinity just yesterday. And I'm not making that up, but I actually was having this conversation. And I was talking to somebody who was really struggling with that term. And we got into the conversation, I think it was really apparent that if you say toxic masculinity, it may sound like you are labeling masculinity itself as toxic, which is not at all, I think, the intent behind that. It's merely saying that if masculinity or parts of masculinity, I should say, are defined as, you know, always be stoic, always be aggressive, never seek help, always do these things, and you have to abide by those rules, that itself is toxic. It's not the masculinity as a whole. There are many wonderful things about being masculine that shouldn't be labeled as toxic. So just to clarify that point, I think there are, on multiple different angles, people want to stay into these perspectives that can be toxic for everybody. And as an example, a few years ago, right, 6 years ago or something, you know, I went to an event and was introduced to a fella. He started chatting to me, and I realized that we both knew a similar friend. He had hired her, and she'd quit 2 weeks into it because another opportunity that she'd been waiting on had come up. And I said, oh, I didn't realize you knew her. And he said, oh, yeah, what a bitch. And it struck me that I've just met the dude, He knows that I know her, and he thought it was appropriate to call her that. And I remember thinking, like, if it was a guy, would he have said that? Probably wouldn't. And it was that permission to say that about a woman so easily, and the assumption that as a man I'd back him up, that I just found so bizarre. So I wrote this quick little blog post and I put it out there, and it blew up. But what struck me was that I received thousands of comments on it, some from people saying, yep, this is a great take on, you know, the problems of gender that we have. Some from men who were negative about it. And the positive ones were from both men and women. The negative male ones were very much of, you know, feminism is going to ruin the world and all that sort of stuff. Mm. But what amazed me, and I still struggle with understanding, is that there were women who were posting the same thing negatively, that this is terrible and, you know, don't spread this stuff and that's bullshit, et cetera. And I remember just thinking, why would you, if what I'm talking about is the advancement of our freedom in terms of being who I want to be as a man or a woman and the respect for each other, why would you want to go backwards? And the only thing I could figure out that it might be is that, well, we know that. We know the rules there. We know that, you know, traditionally I would come home from work and my wife would be there making dinner and put the food on the table, and I wouldn't talk about my emotions necessarily and I wouldn't seek help. And we'd have a very strict sort of way of interacting. And that's, we kind of have had that for so long that it's easy to navigate. Mm. And maybe the reaction was, yeah, if we go into this new world of being more free with our definitions of femininity, masculinity, that's scary and we don't know the rules. We don't know where our place sits in that. Mm. So that's the only thing I can kind of figure out. It might have been.
I was going to say, I immediately thought safe. So because it's what they know. It's common knowledge, it's what they know. They don't want to go into, like you said, a new way of being, a new way of, you know, respecting one another. Yeah, so for them, they feel unsafe to kind of move into that territory. But like you said, at the end of the day, it's just respect. Like, come on, like that's a common, you know.
I do want to just say, I'm trying to practice as much as possible that my opinion is my opinion. And we're all kind of learning and figuring things out as best as we can with the knowledge that we have. And so as much as I might say, you know, we should be moving in this direction, and somebody might be thinking that's really scary, and as you say, it's not safe, I don't like it, I get it. And I get that we all need to kind of process things our own way. So I'd never say to somebody like, you know, you're being an asshole, just get with the program. Mm. I just want to reassure, if I'm talking to somebody like that, like, it's going to be okay. These things will figure out, and you won't lose your place in society because we've lifted up another group.
Yeah. I guess everything just needs to be met with compassion and patience. This is, like you said,
totally,
kind of a weird navigating world that we're in at the moment. So we just have to be patient with one another and just respect one another. And obviously some things are going to really trigger people, especially now when things are very uncertain and everyone's feeling a little bit on edge. I can tell because way people are communicating to each other online is very fiery. It's very fiery.
For sure.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I've absolutely loved this conversation. Is there anything else that you want to add?
A couple of things. One, I would say that, you know, at the beginning of this conversation, it was about my work for the past 10 years and seeing how men traditionally have been taught to not seek help and how that has resulted in such tragedy. You know, people every day in Australia will decide it's easier to take their life than to ask for help. That is heartbreaking. So at the back of that, I would say, if you are one of those people that is struggling and thinking of suicide and you know, desperate for help, just put your hand up, ask for help, call Lifeline, just take that first step. And I promise you that it will get better. I guarantee you it will get better. The second thing is that in this whole conversation about, it's pretty heady, right? Like it's pretty big kind of philosophical thoughts about society and how we progress. What is amazing to me though is how quickly society can change. And, you know, one thing always stands out for me is when I was in high school, which is a very, very long time ago, but I was in high school, And I graduated and I'd gone back the year later with a girl I knew, and her little brother was going to be in this performance of something. And we were walking up to the school, and he was there with his friends, maybe around grade 10 or something. And listening to them, it occurred to me that this kid was openly gay and all his friends were straight, and it was not a big deal. They did not care whatsoever. And yet, a year earlier in my grade, saying to somebody, "Oh, you're so gay," would have been a huge insult. And what occurred to me then is that change happens, and we agonize about it, and we, as you say, we fight about it a lot, particularly online. You know, we thrash and we gnash at each other, but it happens, and it happens when we're not looking. And so these things will sort out. They will find a way to reorganize things and to kind of tidy up the shelf. And then you look over and the whole room's clean, and it just kind of happens like that. So I have a lot of hope and faith for humanity in the future.
That's absolutely beautiful. The work that you've done today and the impact that you're making, and I can really tell that you're coming not only from a place of personal experience, but you've done so much work with Spur, and hopefully, like you said, you know, things are changing and moving in the right direction. So it will lead to a healthier world where people just can feel great in who they are. They don't have to feel this overwhelming pressure to kind of be something that they don't genuinely want to be. So where can the listeners find you in the work that Spur's doing?
They can see our work at wearespur.com. We are on Instagram at wearespur. I'm on Twitter at William C. Stubbs. And if you want to look at any of our mental health projects, if you go to org.wearespur.com, also on that site, we have the world's largest list of mental health resources that we've compiled for different countries and regions around the world. So again, if you are somebody who is struggling, at org.wearespur.com, we have a wide range of resources that you can tap into.
Amazing. We'll link all that in the show notes. So thank you so much, Will. That's it.
Thanks, Jessica.
For today. If you guys have enjoyed this episode, please rate and leave a review, and I will speak to you on the next episode. Thanks, guys.